This morning, I want us to think about some things regarding the conscience. And this is maybe a very important thing for us to consider, especially right now. And we'll see why as we go through this. But this is something that has been on my mind a little bit, and it's something that I think we need to be reminded of on a pretty regular basis. I remember in my elementary school, the cutoff between elementary school and junior high was 6th and 7th grade. So when I was in 5th and 6th grade, we were getting ready to go to the different school building to start 7th grade. And in those last couple of years, there would be kids from the middle school that would come over to our elementary school. And they would warn us and they would say things like, hey, when you get to middle school, people are going to offer you drugs. And people are going to try to encourage you to do all kinds of things that are really bad for you. And I remember hearing those people come, and I always kind of had some doubt in my mind that some of what they were saying was maybe a little bit overblown, that I didn't need to take that as serious until I started to see some things in middle school. All of us have probably seen people transform from good to worse, people that you wouldn't have expected. I remember kids that were in elementary school with me who were the kinds of kids that were always concerned with pleasing the teacher and making everybody happy around them, and they seemed to have a pretty good attitude about a lot of things. And then they just dramatically changed for the worse. And I always tried to understand, why was this happening? I didn't understand this. Maybe you're here this morning right now, and you're thinking back to a year ago right now. Or you're thinking back to a period of time in your life where you were more sensitive and dedicated to God. And there are certain things now that you've allowed to be part of your life, or maybe I've allowed to be part of my life in the way that I think about things. And it doesn't cause you to blush anymore. It doesn't bother you like it used to. Why is it that people go from being healthy to being not so healthy? What's one of the reasons for that? There's a lot of answers to that question. But at the core of a lot of these discussions, I think, would be the degradation of the conscience and the things around us that can start to affect the conscience and how we think about things. So this morning, I want us to consider a few things about this. I want to start out by defining the conscience, though. Can you think of probably the best passage in the Bible that defines the conscience for us and explains what it is in Romans chapter 2. Look at Romans chapter 2, verses 14 and 15. It says, "For when Gentiles who do not have the law by nature do what the law requires, they are a law to themselves, even though they do not have the law. They show that the work of the law is written on their hearts, while their conscience also bears witness, and their conflicting thoughts accuse or even excuse them." Now, there's a lot to say in especially verse 15 about the conscience. But in the context here, what's happening is Paul, in the first three chapters of Romans, is explaining that everybody is the same before God because everybody's a sinner. It doesn't matter what ethnicity you are. It doesn't matter what country you come from. Everybody before God is a sinner. So in chapter 1, you've got the Gentiles being sinners, and this goes into chapter 2 as well. And in this passage, he's talking about how the Gentiles who don't have the law are condemned. Well, how is it fair for people who never had the law of Moses to be condemned? Well, in this passage is answering how they still know, even without the law of God, that there's something within them that's letting them know that they've done things that are not right. And he's saying that that's what the conscience is doing for these people. And so if you look at verse 15, he uses this word conscience. The Greek word for conscience is something like synaedesis or something. I don't know. I don't know this stuff. But I know what the lexicons tell me. And one of the definitions of this word for the conscience is distinguishing between what is morally good and bad, prompting to do the former and shun the latter. So this is one way that you can think about the conscience. Whenever you're tempted to do something or say something or think something that's not right, you kind of have this intuition in you that says, that's not right, I shouldn't be doing that. This is also related to another word that means to become aware. It's like this self-awareness that I'm about to trespass and I'm about to step over something and do something or say something or think something that's not right. Now, those are some ways that you could think about the word. But if you look at verse 15 again, do you see what else it is that the conscience does? It says that it bears witness. It bears witness. I remember when I was working as a paralegal, and I was working with a lawyer in Minnesota, and we would have to go to arraignment hearings. And sometimes people would want to bear witness that they didn't do this or they didn't do that. When you bear witness in court, you're testifying to the judge and to the jurors and everybody that this is actually what happened. That's what happened. It's not what you think it is or whatever. And here, what the conscience is doing is it's bearing witness. It's making you aware. It's making an argument that either I just did the right thing, and so I'm accused in verse 15, or what I actually did was okay, and so it's excusing me in this scenario. So those are maybe a couple ways to think about the conscience. But you notice also in verse 15 where it says, they show that the work of the law is written on their, what's the next word? Hearts. And then it goes on to talk about the conscience. What is the heart? When people talk about, let's get to the heart of the matter, they're talking about the deepest thing, the root of the issue. In the Bible, the word heart can mean your thoughts, your motives, your intentions. But this is another verse that shows that part of the heart is the conscience. And so as we go through this lesson, we'll look at some other passages that will use the word heart. But in the context, it's talking about the conscience and what that does. And so maybe one way that you could think about what the conscience is on your car. Mine is on right now, the check engine light. And when the check engine light is on, it's kind of like this internal thing in the car that's letting you know that it could melt down, that there's something wrong with the car, you need to get it checked out. That's kind of what the conscience does for us. It's like the check engine light that we're starting to tread on dangerous territory if we continue. So, all right, so that's maybe some ways to think about the conscience. The second thing I want to do in this lesson is to consider some different varieties of consciences that the Bible teaches. There's different kinds of consciences. Everybody in this room, we've been conditioned in different ways based on our background, based on the things that we've learned, based on our experiences. And so the Bible, it lists out in different places. We kind of have to collect these passages. But it teaches that there's different conditionings that the conscience can have. And so I want to go through three of them in this lesson. You could probably find four or five like different varieties of it. But I want to talk about the three main ones that I think the Bible talks about. And as we go through these three, they start from the worst and then they gradually get better. So the first one is what we could call the hardened conscience. There's a couple passages that talk about this. But the first one I want to look at is Ephesians 4, 17 through 19. Now this I say and testify in the Lord, that you must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their minds. They are darkened in their understanding, alienated from the life of God because of the ignorance that is in them due to their hardness of heart. They have become callous and have given themselves up to sensuality, greedy to practice every kind of impurity. You know what's interesting to me in this passage? He's talking about how the Gentiles walk. Chapters 4, 5, and 6 of Ephesians is where you get to the practical, how do I walk as a Christian? And he's saying here that about the Gentiles, that they have darkened minds, they're alienated from the life of God, they're ignorant, there's all kinds of things that they don't understand. And in verse 19, it says that they're greedy. Now, when you think about the word greed, oftentimes you might think about love of money. That's not what he's saying here in this passage. To be greedy means that you have an insatiable appetite for something. And in this particular context, they're greedy to practice every kind of impurity. So they're very sensual kind of people, these people that have the hardened conscience, which is ironic because what is it that the person with the hardened conscience craves? They crave to feel things. And in the process, what are they doing to their conscience? In verse 19, they have become callous. When I was in Minnesota growing up, because it would snow so much, a lot of the kids at school one of the things that we'd all complain about is how much snow we had to shovel, because mom and dad always made us go out and do that kind of thing. And the kids, even though they were wearing gloves when they would be shoveling, they'd come to school and be like, hey, check out the calluses on our hands. And then kids would take the safety pins and poke them through the calluses, and then they'd like hold up, and whoever could have the most on their hand was the coolest person. I never did that because I wasn't cool. But there's a lot of people that would do that, and they would talk about how I don't feel anything. Do you see that? That's what happens with the calloused conscience. The calloused conscience is the one that maybe the first couple times you experienced that sin or you treaded into that territory, it felt really bad. It felt like you were doing something wrong, but you did it repeatedly because you wanted that sensation again, and now you don't feel the pain anymore. That's one passage that explains that. Another one is 1 Timothy 4, verses 1 and 2. Now the Spirit expressly says that in the latter times some will depart from the faith by devoting themselves to deceitful spirits and teachings of demons through the insincerity of liars whose consciences are seared. In this passage, you've got false teachers that are leading people astray. And as they're leading people astray, it says that one of the things that's characteristic about these false teachers is that they have consciences that are seared. Do you remember a couple of years ago when the Samsung Galaxy S7 came out, and when people would fly on airplanes and they'd say, if you have a Galaxy S7 or whatever, please take the battery out or turn it off or whatever when we're flying? Because do you remember what the concern was people had about that phone? Is that it would overheat and sometimes explode? And it could cause dangers, obviously. What happens when something heats up so much, like an iron? It gets overheated, and then the thing just stops working altogether. The imagery here of having a seared conscience makes me think about that. That the first couple times, again, that you thought about doing something that you shouldn't have done, it was like big warning signs, and it was flashing all over your mind that you shouldn't be doing this, and then you keep doing it over and over and over again until the conscience has just been destroyed. Now, think about this in your life. I might not have a totally hardened conscience, but are there areas in your life that you can recall your first exposure to this or that really bothered you? The first time you ever spoke this way or that way about people really bothered you. And then as you did it more and more and more, you kind of didn't feel that pain anymore. Have we become less sensitive by habitually saying and doing things that we knew were wrong from the beginning, but now we've killed the feeling that says that it's wrong? That's the hardened conscience. The second kind of conscience is the weak conscience. This is a little bit better than the first one, but it still has some problems. Romans 14. Look at Romans 14, 1 through 3. As for the one who is weak in faith, welcome him, but not to quarrel over opinions. One person believes he may eat anything, while the weak person eats only vegetables. Let not the one who eats despise the one who abstains, and let not the one who abstains pass judgment on the one who eats, for God has welcomed him. Now, my purpose in this lesson is not to talk about all the conscience issues that exist, the Romans 14 issues. I'm just trying to help us diagnose different kinds of consciences right now. But in this context, what's happening is Paul is trying to help the church of Rome to understand how Jews and Gentiles, people who've grown up and been habituated in different kinds of ways, how to help them be unified in the Lord and work together despite the differences that they had about the ways that they had been brought up and the ways that they had thought about things and the way that they're processing this new Christianity that they've joined. And he's trying to help them understand, give them instructions that would help them have peace in the midst of things like this. But you notice here it talks about the person that's weak in faith. The person that's weak in faith, in verse 2, eats only vegetables. Now, we'll kind of walk through some of this. But was it wrong for a Christian to eat meat? No. But imagine for a moment that you grew up in a pagan family. And there's some debate about how to tease some of this out, but let's just take this direction with it. Let's say for a moment that you grew up in a family that was pagan, and you were used to going to the idol temples, and you'd have this big party, and people would take this slab of meat that they got from a cow or something, and they would dedicate it to Zeus, and then they would start cutting it up, and you would eat it, and you used to enjoy all of that, until one day, this guy named Paul, or these other people are in Rome, and they start teaching people the gospel. Paul never visited Rome when he had written this, but somebody had started teaching you the gospel. And you started learning about it, and you decided to become a Christian, and you're at a party with other Christians, and they're starting to have some meat. And you're worried about that, because in your mind, the connotation to eating meat was always something associated with the temple. And for you, you're weak in faith in the sense that you think that it's wrong to have it in any scenario because of your former associations. One way that you could think about it is that the weak conscience is more conservative than God. That's a typo there. This says conversative than God. It should say conservative. And so contrast this with the seared or the hardened conscience. The hardened conscience is more liberal than God. It says that I can do whatever I want to do. But the weak conscience says that there are certain things that I don't feel comfortable doing that God has actually said is okay for me to do. I remember before I became a Christian, there was different things in my life that were idols at different times. And one of the things that shortly before I became a Christian, that was my biggest idol was music. And the kind of music that I like to listen to is like death metal. And I used to have album covers that were like scary and looked satanic and everything like that. And then I became a Christian and I got rid of all of my CDs. And then the longer I had been a Christian, I realized that there were some of those CDs, not the satanic ones. I just got rid of all of them. And there were some of them that I had to actually repurchase years later that I had thought through a little bit more and thought, well, those ones were actually not so bad. Those ones were kind of bad. But because of my former association with idolatry, that was my form of idolatry, I felt like I had to just totally cleanse myself of all of it. And so in your life, there might be things based on your former associations that you might feel very uncomfortable doing, but God has actually said there's nothing inherently wrong with that. Do you notice in verse 3 that the person with the weak conscience here, look at verse 3 again. Let not the one who eats despise the one who abstains, and let not the one who abstains, so the person with the weak conscience that's abstaining, let not them pass judgment on the one who eats, for God has welcomed him. Do you know what's characteristic about the person that has a weak conscience? They're constantly judging other people. Now, this goes both directions in this passage. But the person with the weak conscience is constantly looking at everybody else and thinking that they're very, very liberal in every way that you can imagine. When sometimes the things that they're making judgments about are things that God has actually said, this is not inherently wrong. Now, we got to be careful in how we have attitudes about all of this, and we can't make this as excuses to do things that are actually sinful. But if you look at Romans chapter 15, verse 1, it says, we who are strong have an obligation to bear with the failings. Notice he uses the word failings, the failings of the weak, and not to please ourselves. Is Paul saying that it's inherently sinful to have a weak conscience? No, but he is saying that there's failings to it. There are certain things that are not totally in tune with God, but it doesn't mean that they're committing sin unless they're allowing that to cause them to judge other people. And so that's the weak conscience. It's the one that's more conservative than God. The third conscience, there's a lot that we could say about this, but we're only going to use one passage. But the third conscience is the good one. One passage to consider with this, 2 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 12. For our boast is this, the testimony of our conscience that we have behaved in the world with simplicity and godly sincerity, not by earthly wisdom, but by the grace of God, and supremely so toward you. Paul here is boasting to the Corinthian church that my conscience is clean. What's the context of this? In the context of this passage, Paul is dealing with the false teachers who are influencing the thinking of the Christians about Paul. And you can imagine that these false teachers, they've kind of tried to gather all this dirt against Paul. And one of the things that he's talking about in this context specifically is that Paul had said that he was going to visit the Corinthians, and then he didn't in the time period that they thought he was going to. And he's trying to make this argument that he's always operated by the same way of thinking. He's not being duplicitous and things like that, that the false teachers could have been accusing him of. And he's saying, hey, we behaved with a good conscience. I haven't done anything wrong. I feel good about the way that I've been handling myself. The conscience that Paul has here is in tune with God. It's not more conservative than God. It's not more liberal than God. He's been doing what God would want him to do. If you read people like Christopher Hitchens or Richard Dawkins or some of the new atheists, as they're sometimes called, some of them will talk about going through therapy to retrain your conscience, for you to know that sexual immorality is actually not wrong, and for you to think that doing these activities that the Bible says are wrong are actually okay. There's a lot of folks today that actually think that what the Bible does for people is it makes them feel guilty when they shouldn't feel guilty. So how can we go through some kind of therapy to break free from the shackles of the Bible? Is having a good conscience some kind of curse that restrains us too much? What are the blessings of a good conscience? One thing that I think we can see is the value of pain. How valuable is pain? Like, just think about it from a physical standpoint first. I've read about stories of leper colonies, Hansen's disease, where people that have gone to research leprosy, they'll go to these leper colonies where these people live. And the eyewitness accounts of these people that have been there have said that they've observed people with leprosy who didn't realize that as they were standing around a fire, that their feet were burning until they finally smelled it. Some of these same people have also written that some of the people that had leprosy, because leprosy deadens your ability to feel pain, that they've had like nails sticking through parts of their arm and they didn't notice it until they saw the blood and stuff like this. What's one of the curses of leprosy? Is that you don't feel pain. What is the purpose of pain? Physical pain? A kid puts the hand on the oven and it starts to hurt. What if they didn't feel the pain of that? What would happen to the whole hand? It would all just be destroyed and mutilated. One of the values of pain of a conscience that's tender and it's in tune with God, is that it's telling us, if I keep going, something worse is going to happen. So that's a valuable thing. But there's another blessing of a good conscience, and that's confidence. 1 John chapter 3, verses 21 and 22. Beloved, if our heart does not condemn us, we have confidence before God, and whatever we ask, we receive from Him, because we keep His commandments and do what pleases Him. This is sort of what Paul is saying in 2 Corinthians chapter 1. These false teachers are saying all kinds of things about him that aren't true. What gives him confidence is that he knows in his conscience he hasn't done anything wrong. Have you ever had a time before where people were accusing you of something that wasn't right? And sometimes our tendency can be, well, if people are saying this about me, there's got to be something true to that. And sometimes that's right. But sometimes we can listen to other people so much and it's not actually the truth. You know, there's a lot of people that talk about trying to be confident. How do you get confident? Well, you have to have a cool haircut. You have to have a car that doesn't have a check engine light. And you have to have a nice suit. Like, you have to look the part. And then you can be confident. Biblically speaking, how do you actually become confident? It's by knowing that before God, I have not wronged Him. I've done exactly what it is that He's asked me to do. I haven't done it perfectly. And for the times that I don't do it perfectly, Jesus' blood cleanses me. But before God, my conscience is clean. So the world can accuse me of everything that it wants to. But if I know before God I'm right, I have a good conscience. I'm confident. What a blessing to have that. Now, those are the different kinds of consciences. The last thing I want to do in this lesson is how do we train the conscience? So I think all of us can probably identify areas in our life where our conscience has been hardened, that we don't feel the same kind of pain that we used to, and that needs to kind of get tenderized again, if that's a word. Some of us might have a weak conscience where we're more conservative than God. Some of us might have a good conscience in certain parts of it. How do we train our conscience? Here's a few suggestions. The first thing is to educate the conscience. In 1 Corinthians 8:9-10, that's another section of Scripture that deals with the conscience. And here, I'm just going to pluck this one verse out here. But look at 1 Corinthians 8, verse 7. However, not all possess this knowledge that eating meat inherently is wrong. However, not all possess this knowledge, but some through former association with idols eat food as really offered to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. Here's what Paul is saying here, is that there's some of the Christians in Corinth that think that they can go to the temple and they can sacrifice at the temple and or they can eat the meat at the temple. And Paul is saying, look, if another brother sees you doing that, some of these people that don't have the knowledge that inherently eating meat is not wrong. And there's more to say about this context. In our 1 Corinthians class, we'll have a more detailed discussion of this. But he's saying that in this situation, not all possess this knowledge that the meat inherently is not wrong. One of the things that I need to do with my conscience is I need to start illuminating it with God's word. We've got this inner GPS that tells us somewhat accurately, maybe not always accurately, when something is right or wrong. But we need further illumination and training from light outside of our conscience, which comes from God. I remember the semester that I first started reading the Bible. So my first semester of college, the Gideon people were handing out Bibles. And for months, I'd been praying that God would teach me wisdom and truth. And I got a Gideon Bible, and I started in Matthew, and I tried reading the genealogy, and it made no sense to me. So I set it down, and I didn't read for another 3 months. It confirmed to me that I couldn't learn anything about the Bible because I don't know why we need all these names. But then second semester started, and this is at a secular school. My professor for logic, for my logic class, said, does anybody know the first verse of the Bible? And I thought to myself, well, I've been praying for wisdom and truth for a long time now. I've only read the Bible once. How about I start with the first verse of the Bible? So I started reading Genesis that week. And the passages that I was reading weren't even dealing with the kinds of sins that I was committing at the time. But just by handling the scripture and starting to read it, my conscience was starting to be affected because I was looking at God's things. Getting in the Bible and allowing it to affect the way that we think, educating our conscience so that we can know what's right and wrong is an important thing. Psalm 119, we just sang a song about that. How can a young man keep his way pure? By guarding it according to your word. With my whole heart I seek you. Let me not wander off from your commandments. I have stored up your word in my heart that I might not sin against you. I love that imagery of storing something up. If you store up an emergency savings account, that means that it's always ready for the emergency. If I'm storing up the scriptures in my heart, I might not know why this passage or that passage applies to me right now. But if I have the kind of heart that says, I want to learn all of it, sooner or later there's going to come some point in my life where that passage will finally be realized in my mind why I needed to know it. Storing it up in your heart. So educating the conscience, not stopping, continually learning. Here's the second thing, is exposure to godly people. What is it that oftentimes harms the conscience is exposure to ungodly people. What does 1 Corinthians 15 say? Bad company corrupts good morals. Or you can think about it like Proverbs 22 verses 24 and 25. Make no friendship with a man given to anger, nor go with a wrathful man, lest you learn his ways and entangle yourself in a snare. You can imagine somebody you've never seen struggle with anger issues. And until they deal with traffic in Atlanta, or they start hanging around people that have anger problems. Have you ever heard the phrase before that some things are better caught than taught? That there are some things that you kind of learn just by absorbing it, by being around it, and nobody like taught you how to do it. Have you ever seen somebody become really angry because they started hanging around angry people? What is that doing? Well, it's the conscience is being deadened by these people that you're spending time with. Could it be the case that as we keep watching different things in media, that when media and movies and TV shows and all these things have worldly messages and worldly ideas that are throughout the whole thing, that we don't even notice these things anymore, that these things are actually coming from a false worldly perspective, that we don't even see these things anymore because we're not alert to them anymore. But as this constant exposure happens, we're not discerning what we're really surrounding ourselves with anymore. So exposure to godly people, if ungodly people can hurt your conscience, godly people can help your conscience. Look at Hebrews chapter 3, verses 12 and 13. Take care, brothers, lest there be in any of you an evil, unbelieving heart leading you to fall away from the living God. But exhort one another every day, as long as it is called today, that none of you may be hardened by the deceitfulness of sin. Have you ever been around people that you feel like, oh, when I'm around that person, I have to be really careful with how I talk? I have to be more courteous. There's certain things that I might say around other people that I can't say around this person. What if I always hung out with people like that? Would it be the case that maybe some of their conscience and some of their conscientiousness about sin would start to affect the way that I think about things when I'm not even around them? What's one of the dangers of not assembling with the saints, of not being with other Christians? Is that I'm assembling with something, somebody elsewhere, whether it be the things that I'm watching online or on TV or the people that I am comfortable being around. We need one another so that our consciences don't get so deadened that we're no longer discerning the messages of the world from the things that God would want us to think about. So exposure to godly people. Are you somehow connecting with God's people? And if not, one of the things that we need to be worried about is the conscience. Final suggestion is confession. Think about David. Did David in his life at any point, do you ever remember him having a really tender conscience? Remember that time when he was in the cave with his men? And Saul came into the cave to use the bathroom. I guess that's where people went to the bathroom back then. I wonder if they had toilet paper. I don't know. Saul was in the cave, and David, his men are saying, just get him. This is the opportunity. And David kind of goes up and he cuts part of his robe. And it hurt his conscience when he did that. That same man, several years later, commits adultery with Bathsheba and has a murder done to the husband, Uriah. This guy went from a very tender conscience to a conscience that got so deadened at some point in his life that he wrote Psalm 51 after these events. And it says in Psalm 51, verses 9 and 10, hide your face from my sins and blot out all my impure iniquities. Create in me a clean heart, O God, and renew a right spirit within me. What are the things that David is praying for here? Amongst many other things, I think one of the things that he's asking for is for a clean conscience. Please help me feel the pain that I need to feel. Help me to have this contrite heart that he is expressing in Psalm 51. You know one of the important things about confession to God? Have you ever had a scab before that you kept picking and so it took a while for it to actually heal? Confession to God is kind of like that. Because a scab is hard. It's hardened. It makes you feel less pain in that area. When we confess sin to God, doesn't it hurt for a moment? It's kind of like peeling a scab back open for a second. Because you're starting to forget about it and it didn't hurt anymore. But then I have to bring it up to God and it's hard to have that conversation with God. It's like peeling a scab back open. But when you do that, I mean, you shouldn't do that with a literal thing on your arm or whatever. But as you do that, it's keeping that area more tender, isn't it? To use that same imagery in a different way, the more and more that we confess sin to God, God already knows. But are there things in your life that you feel like you should feel worse about than you do? Could one of your prayers to God be, please renew a right spirit within me? Help me to start mourning for the things that I should be mourning for. Help me to stop making all these kinds of ungodly remarks about this political person or this political party, or please help me to have the right kind of perspective about the things that are happening in my world. Help me to not be hardened by all the things that people are going through right now. Help me to not close my heart up to people. Help me to feel guilty again. when I need to feel guilty again? When is it that our consciences are initially cleansed? 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 21. Baptism, which corresponds to this, now saves you, not as a removal of dirt from the body, but as an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus. When somebody's baptized, what are they doing? They're appealing to God. They're saying, God, please cleanse my conscience. Take this burden of guilt away from me. Please make my conscience feel like a good one so that before you, I know that I'm right. Some of us in this room might have a calloused conscience, where we don't feel the pain like we need to. Some of us might have a weak conscience, where we feel pain when we don't need to feel it. Some of us maybe still have this burdened conscience that has never even been forgiven to begin with. This is an opportunity for us to consider, how is it that this world is affecting me? Will I come to God and, like this song says, give me thy heart, says the Savior of men, calling in mercy again and again? Will we give our heart over to God and let him cleanse us and renew us? If there's anything that you need, this is an opportunity to talk to somebody here before you leave, or to come forward while we stand and while we sing.